He's kind of like the Joe Rogan of the hospitality industry right now.
Like you said, a condo hotel, all the design looks the same, all the fronting's the same, all of the everything's the same. Here, yes, we've got Orion Homes, which are incredibly well designed, but and also unique. It's not cookie cutter. Not every single one looks the same. But then our resident base has got a very dynamic listing base. So they all have a different personality. So you're getting kind of that local flair, but with the hotel consistency.
Welcome to Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast where we discuss all things hospitality, hotels, and business. You can find us online at slicktalkthepodcast.com and on every podcast listening platform.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast, and I'm your host, Will Slickers. Today, we get to have a fun conversation about a new type of development, at least new to me, and this is very exciting stuff. So, Cindy, I'm excited to have you on the show and introducing Orion House to the Slick Talk audience.
Thank you so much. We're excited to be here.
Of course. We had a conversation not too long ago, and just getting to understand what the Orion House brand and model is. And so I really just want to jump right into everything, kind of what your background is, how you got into hospitality, and then, of course, what the leading steps were into this new adventure that you're on with Orion House.
All right, I'm going to go like back 20 years quickly because I'm a serial entrepreneur before entrepreneurship was, you know, kind of the cool thing to do. Started college while I was in eighth grade, dropped out of high school, went to college full time. And then while I was there, launched my first.
Did you say eighth grade?
Yes. So wow. I started at the University of Iowa in middle school. They were, the state of Iowa is very progressive in education, and they were testing this dual enrollment with high performing middle school students, of which I was one of six or eight. And so started there really early on. I was getting 4.0 in AP classes, and so I thought I was prepared for university life, but I didn't actually check to ensure that I could fully enroll while I was not in dual enrollment. So found out after I got my GED that I was not qualified to go to university full time at the University of Iowa. However, University of South Florida would gladly accept me at that time. So moved to South Florida, started school there. And then my neighbor at that time was launching a clothing company. So started that with him when I was about 18, company called David and Goliath, and that was juniors and young men's apparel. And we took that all over the country and then distribution about 35 different countries around the world. And then from there went into beverage and hospitality, which led me to real estate, of which that's where I am now. So since about 2015, I've been working in multifamily real estate development and acquisitions, with the focus in building communities that are Airbnb and home sharing friendly. So my first two ventures were Nido, which is a rental product. We had properties in Orlando and Nashville, and then Nativo, which is a condo product. Same thing, we sell it out. People can then lease their units on an annualized basis, or they can do home sharing through our home sharing program. So opportunities to monetize those investments or those rental properties in both brands. Left there early 2019 and have since launched Orion House, which is a just kind of gen three of this home sharing multifamily concept.
So can I ask this? I did not know about the college thing at like eighth grade. So that's insane to understand, like, holy crap, that's pretty incredible. I just got to give you like my hat off to you right there.
I found more trouble with the extra time I ended up having on my plate than anything.
Yeah.
And so, you know, trying to put that energy into something that would move me forward was really where my focus was at that time. My friends were drinking and drugging and whatever. And I was like, okay, I could go that way or I can go this way. And I took the path to entrepreneurship, which has certainly not been easy, but has been incredibly fruitful.
Yeah. I was going to say with that, were you always not like struggling, but finding yourself continually, I bet you probably felt like you had to keep growing. Like you had to keep on that certain, like that's a high paced, high energy, especially when you're like at that wavelength of just thinking and knowledge and everything. This is probably intense. Like you don't like feeling standing still.
It's definitely like an internal drive for sure.
Yeah.
You know, when I find myself kind of getting stagnant or, you know, feeling like I'm not as productive or as successful as I should be, it's like massive amounts of anxiety. So it's that, it's that internal drive. You know, my parents were always like super supportive of whatever path I were to go down. My mom and stepfather are teachers and educators and philanthropists. And, you know, as much of my heart lies there, also as a capitalist, I understand that in order to be able to give back, you have to have something to give. Yeah. And so I always kind of said, you know, in order for me to really make an impact in the world and the things that I am most passionate about, I've got to have money to do that. And so kind of ran parallel paths. You know, I always like to say, like, my mom and my brothers are saving the world, and I'm just helping them do it.
That's a good way to look at it. I want to ask you on the questions about Nido and Nativo, because going from an apparel brand at 18 to then working into like real estate and development, what were the leading moments to those? Like, how did you even think of that concept? Because that, to me, like, there's a couple, we've seen similar companies in the area or in the industry, like Stay Alfred or Sonder and other companies like that, who, you know, do kind of like a multi-unit, multi-family type structure. But I'm curious to think of like what sparked Nido and Nativo.
So I would have to say there's a couple really critical moments that really got me here. And I think one of them is, just taking opportunity when it presents itself. And I'll tell you, about 6 or 7 years ago, I was sitting at a lunch in Miami, and a friend at the time, who ultimately became my business partner, and I were just talking about business. And he was like, "Wow, I'm so impressed with what you're doing," whatever. He said, "You know, I'm in real estate development. Like, have you thought about getting into this space and doing anything with Airbnb?" And I said, "Well, I've been a host on Airbnb since 2009. So as an entrepreneur, that really saved me in a lot of different situations where I either had businesses that were failing, or I was short on cash flow, or I was in fundraising modes, and I would lean on Airbnb to prop me up." So I said, "I know the product incredibly well from the hosting perspective. I know it incredibly well from a traveler's perspective, because also as an entrepreneur, I used Airbnb as, you know, a tool for me to be able to maximize the amount of capital I had in order to go and pitch investors and do what I needed to do." So I said, "I know it inside and out." And he goes, "Well, I've got a problem in some of my buildings. We've got they're luxury towers, and we've got a massive amount of transient behavior that's coming and going out of these doors. And it's virtually impossible to control that." You know what I mean? Because people say their friends and their family and their guests, whatever. And he said, "How do we create a model that can protect the integrity of the building and the brand that we had designed, while still allowing our residents and those that came in as investors to monetize that, the assets, the way they want to?" And that was really kind of the birth of the idea. You know, the background that I had using the platform, as a tool and utility and revenue source for myself, was kind of the genesis of it. Like, okay, well, let's figure out all the flaws. Like, how is it broken? It's all of the issues that you always encounter. You show up and the place isn't what you expected it to be, or you can't get in, or the locks don't work, or there's no Wi-Fi and you're there as a business traveler. So I said, you know, you've got to identify what all of these holes are. And then also from the host perspective, the inconsistency on the traveler or the quality of traveler that takes care of your home. So there was like this massive flywheel effect. And I said, if we can kind of close that gap on the amount of hosts that come into the ecosystem, as well as the amount of travelers that come into the ecosystem, and those that fly off because they have a bad experience, if we could create an equilibrium there to keep them in the ecosystem, that's what's going to be the most beneficial. That's what's going to stabilize your communities. That's what's going to stabilize inventory for platforms like Airbnb. And so that's what I really like narrowed in on, because I had the most amount of knowledge on that. Not on real estate, not on development. I mean, I just knew how the system worked. I knew why it was flawed, but like how much extraordinary potential it had, and it's just a win-win-win if you can do it right. You know, win for the traveler, win for the guest, win for the building owners, win for Airbnb. Like it's a product everybody wants if you can figure it out. And so it was taking that opportunity and that conversation, I pursued it really hard. because I wanted to get into a deal. And I said, I love this. Like, this is me. And so we formed a company shortly thereafter, 2015, December 2015, and, you know, started building from there. But it was just kind of being at the right place at the right time and also taking those opportunities and running with them.
Yeah, no, I was just going to ask too, before finding out that you were a host, like I was going to ask, did you have any experience with Airbnb? And like, because a lot of, you know, I think we've seen the short-term rental market, not saying that hotels and hoteliers aren't entrepreneurial, but like the, you know, short-term vacation rental segment is very like high-end. Like these are people that were just like, hey, I can pay my mortgage if I rent this out on Airbnb. And then all of a sudden now we have companies like Noise Aware or like Rent Responsibly or, you know, all these other big companies that are forming from just like an idea of like, oh, I'm going to rent out my second home or my home in general. Very entrepreneurial. So like getting into the hospitality space, it's cool to hear that you actually like were jumping in from like actual experience.
I've lived and breathed it. I got evicted multiple times. I mean, I had multiple units I was running in New York, and when one was rented out, I'd sleep in another, I'd sleep on couches. Like I did the whole thing. You know, when you hear stories of like the people that use Airbnb, I mean, I was like one of those power users because it was such a utility and a resource for me that I could just see, you know, if we could make it a little bit more stable, how it really commercialized. And when I say stability, it was, you know, in our buildings in New York, obviously New York was is the most regulated city in the world still.
Yes.
So it's impossible to operate there, but this was very early on before regulations had really locked down. But, you know, if that building owner would have been agreeable to me running my short-term rental out of it, because he was participating in it and making some profit on the upside and had control over the tenants that were coming and going, I think it would have worked. It was so early on, like it was never going to happen. I wasn't going to talk this guy into letting me run this little micro business out of his building, because in their mind, it was, you know, compromising the security and the integrity of what their product offering was supposed to be to the other residents, which I totally agree with.
Well, and it's also like Airbnb from the beginning to now what it is, you know, it was like a couch surfing, you know, platform at the end of the, like beginning of it, which a lot of people, if I had a building, I'd be like, I don't want couch surfers, you know, but the way it's evolved now, like you guys are talking with Orion House and what you did with Nito is that it has evolved. The traveler has evolved, the platform itself, you know, standardization and professionalism and all that other stuff has really changed.
And they force a lot of that too. I mean, you know, especially in our partnership with Airbnb, I mean, I have to give them so much credit for the amount of thought and attention and detail they gave into every aspect of the traveler experience, every aspect of the host experience. I mean, they really wanted to instill, you know, those disciplines in it so that everybody had a good experience, not one party, not just one person got a great travel experience at a discount and not just a host made a lot of extra money while they were out of town. They really, really focused on the traveler and the host and recognized that if it doesn't both work, then the system kind of self-destructs, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm talking about that flywheel effect where a lot of people come in, users come in and then fly off because they have a bad experience. But they were really, really committed, and their CEO, Brian Chesky, is just extraordinary in identifying with people and knowing what they really need, because some people don't understand it, what they really need in order to create the business. But from that leadership perspective and the entire the founding team, they really understood it. And that filters down to every single layer. So we learned so much from them, that partnership. I mean, I can't even tell you, like, I got excited for my weekly reporting meetings. Like I'd have to report to them.
Yeah.
And the guidance and the feedback and the critical questions and all that stuff was just incredible. I mean, it was just an incredible learning experience.
I was gonna say that must have been, I can't imagine having that opportunity to be just like, all right, weekly reporting meetings to the, like, Chesky himself, you know? No,
unfortunately, Chesky wasn't on my weeklies, but it was
the people that reported directly. Well, hey. That's still good enough for me, you know? Well, and it's also like, I love that you said that, like, taking the opportunity, because when you are presented with opportunities, like Airbnb or putting your property in short-term rentals, is a massive opportunity that a lot of people think about or talk about, but then when they actually act on it, that is when it sparks like that creative moment. And I think when you start to see like something you've built yourself and kind of like are like, this is really cool, guests are actually coming and they're staying and they're leaving good reviews, then the ideas and the wheels, I've seen it happen with almost, I would say like 9 out of 10 people that I talk to, like that are doing Airbnb or vacation rentals, the wheels are turning as they're talking, as they're thinking, as they're like just started, they're like, oh, I just launched my listing. And then all of a sudden you just see it and you're like, ah, they're going to do something cool. So
I don't want to go off track, but we have a house. So my fiance's got 2 girls. We were talking about the chaos that ensues. And we have a house in East Texas, just outside of Dallas. Well, not outside of Dallas, 2.5 hours east of Dallas in a town called Texarkana. And I said, Greg, while we're traveling for work, because you know our business is based on the East Coast and we're here every couple of weeks to be with the girls, I said, I want to list the house on Airbnb. And he's a few years my senior, so not in the Airbnb demographic. And he was like, absolutely not, not going to happen. No way in like on God's green earth. And I said, okay, 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 whatever. So I listed, of course, and it immediately gets booked. And I was like, and this is in a town with no travelers, right? There's not a travel community in Texarkana. I mean, most people have never even heard of it. But there are no listings on Airbnb. So we're 2 hours from Dallas and we're 2 hours from Little Rock and three hours from like Oklahoma City. So we're like a meeting point, major cities. Every single weekend I'm booked with golf tournaments and weddings to a point where we can't even stay in our own house. So I built a 3-bedroom guest house in the back.
Oh, because nice.
There's that much demand. So meanwhile, I'm busy, you know, building our quote unquote empire with Orion House. I'm also building like this little micro community in Texarkana to run my Airbnbs out of, because it's that much business, which is just, it's funny, but when you talk about all these micro entrepreneurs, which is what Airbnb really has created, you know, 7 million micro entrepreneurs, I'm one of them too. So I still do my own Airbnbs. I've converted the entire family into it, you know, begrudgingly so, but it is exciting, you know, when you see it and you're like, I just paid for my mortgage twice this month, you know, like off of 2 stays, it's like, woo!
Yeah, seriously.
On somebody's couch, you know, my is getting paid for, my travel's getting paid for. And I think I'll always have that spirit, like that does excite me, you know what I mean? And I think the other point, and I'm glad that you focus on this category so much, is because it is a win-win-win for everybody. And I hear from the people that come and stay in our home, especially in this community, and I'm sitting in it right now, but they go, there's nowhere for us to stay. When we come to stay with our family, they've got really like modest motel, hotel properties as opportunities. Yeah. And they don't want to stay for a week in a hotel room when they're here for the holidays. You know, when you grow up in a small town and you go to Dallas, or, you know, I'm also from Iowa, where it was where I grew up, we go to Chicago. When you come back home and there's not room for you to stay with your now grown family, what else are you supposed to do? And so having Airbnbs is actually like, it's giving families that opportunity to go and travel now, even in these small towns and secondary and tertiary markets. So it's really cool that way. And it gives other people opportunities for income
that 100%.
Just didn't exist. You know, I mean, you make more money.
Exactly. No, I love that you say that too, because it's like, I was just talking to Jeremy Gall from Breezeway, and he and we were talking about the Vrbo tagline that they had, a home away from home, and how much that really has played into like, people are like, you know, Airbnb or vacation rentals, like it's like some people weren't looking at it as like a segment of hospitality, but you think about it, it's really opening, like legitimately, like not to be like, it's like opening a real legitimate door to that connection that we like strive for when we're traveling. Like we'd like to be connected to the area or to the people, like, and getting to meet, like you get to meet people that you've never thought. And when you just have that opportunity to open up your door, literally to someone to stay, it creates, like you said, more and more opportunity. And you're right. Like nobody wants to stay. Like I do hotel travel for like business. Like if it's just me, I'm just going to stay in a hotel for 2 nights or 3 nights. But if I'm bringing more than myself, or, you know, going to be there for like a week or longer, I'm definitely on the short-term rental market. And just because you want the comforts of home, you want to be able to say, you know what, I'm going to go sit in the living room while my, you know, girlfriend or whatever is in the office doing whatever with her work, or, you know, like that opportunity to have the comfort of everything that you aren't with. Yeah.
So. The other piece of this, and then I know you've got more questions, is also disaster relief. Mm. So like, and I just had another lady, like the last few different hurricanes where people were, you know, evacuated from the coastlines going, okay, where can we go that's safe? You know, you can't go an hour inland when the storm trajectory is all over the place. So we ended up hosting a lot of families for evacuations and disaster relief. And another family just reached out to me for a month, the month of December, because they had a water leak in their house. Or no, it was a fire. And then the water, the sprinkler system. So she goes, we need somewhere to stay. We got three kids. We're all working from home. We can't go stay in a hotel.
Yeah.
So then there's this other piece of the business where you're actually feeling a need, you know, for families that, that are in distress, you know? Yeah. So it's pretty interesting. And Airbnb has created a great platform for that as well. And I'm sure Vrbo has, to be familiar with Airbnb, but they do a lot of this kind of displacement and crisis housing. But, you know, that's another big piece of it where it's like people need places to go and there are unoccupied homes all over the place. And 100%. So that's another great attribute of what this platform offers.
Yeah. Well, like you just said, I have tons of other questions. I want to get going into Orion House. And so my first question really will be to help the audience understand what does Orion House mean? And what is the overall concept? Because we're talking about like all these opportunities that being on Airbnb and whole home rentals create, but you guys are creating a whole new opportunity for a new type of generation, a new type of traveler, and more, I find like the entrepreneurial type, you know, resident, right? And so I want to dive into those two parts. What is Orion House and what is the, you know, this new broader spectrum of, you know, hosting and property management?
Yeah, I think it's a new class of residential housing, honestly. And so what we do first and foremost is we are a multifamily community. And for those listeners that might not be familiar with what that term really means, it's a densely populated community, typically in a tower format, in more suburban areas, there'll be multiple buildings, you know, 10 or 15 buildings with 10 or 15 units in them. But traditional multifamily, you lease that up on an annual basis. So 100 people come in, they sign 100 leases, that's their primary or potentially secondary residence. And then while they travel, they can rent their home on Airbnb and or 45 other online travel agencies. So we now, we're agnostic. So we're distributing our listings through every different platform that's compatible with us. So it's not just Airbnb. Mm. In exchange for our allowance of the resident to do the short-term rentals, we take a fee for it, but we also provide all the services and technology and cleaning. Noise Aware, for example, is installed in there to manage the quality and sound in each of the environments for travelers and for residents. And so we provide the home sharing hospitality component so that if you will have a second home, and you're back and forth between Los Angeles and Miami, for example, 1 week on, 1 week off, while you're not in either residence, we at Orion House would run that for you, assuming it's one of our buildings. So you go, okay, I'm in Miami week one, LA week two, vice versa. Then we fill it up, we rent it out, we clean it, we turn it over, and we get it ready for your guests. And then we also get it ready for you when you come back.
Yeah.
And so we really run the hospitality piece of the business. But again, first and foremost, it's an annual lease. Secondarily, it's a short-term rental.
Yeah. So I was going to say the primary business is leasing, right? So you're reliant on people renting these units and leasing them through you guys. And then the second part with like another like revenue stream, et cetera, is through those who are leasing to then put it up on this platform and allow it to be rented while they're out and about traveling and doing what they do.
Exactly. Okay. And the difference is that in rental communities, generally short-term rentals are absolutely precluded from your lease.
Yes, so exactly.
If you rent, you have zero opportunity for additional income. That's why we are partnering with these communities saying, okay, people want to rent, you know, short-term rentals in your marketplace. There's a big demand for it. Mm-hmm. Let's take this program. Let's layer it on top of your existing community. And let's put some infrastructure, security, safety, all of the stuff that needs to go in there to create a stable environment so that people can do short-term rentals and not disrupt the annual residents that live there.
Yeah. It's encouraged and it's professionalized. It's like, it's the quality control factor that I think that we've been missing. Yeah. And when it comes to this type of structure, because when it's not encouraged and it's like, you know, you can't do this, like you turn away a lot of business and a lot of like potential and opportunity for those people that can really create something cool. And then of course you're adding that standardization by providing these services. You're basically like, I am just now thinking of this, I'm like, you're taking all the professional people we've ever had on the podcast and you're putting it into one building. You're just making this like amazing infrastructure of just creativeness, but also very well managed property management in the sense of, yeah, just taking that extra step.
To say it, that we facilitate it, you know, we facilitate your success. Like if you be doing home sharing, we want you to do it. We want to maintain the integrity of our building. We want everybody to have a great experience. We want our brand to be well represented. We want travelers to go, oh my God, I stayed at an Orion house. It was awesome. I'm going back. And to have that recognition similar to what you do in a hotel, but now you're in an apartment. Now you're in a home. Now you've got two bedrooms, a bathroom, an office, or whatever it is that you need, great amenities, but you have that kind of, you know, the good housekeeping seal of approval where it's like, okay, Orion House is they've got great linens. It's cleaning. I like their bathroom products, all that stuff. It gives you that level of kind of quality and professionalism.
Yeah. And what does Orion House mean exactly?
The root of the name is obviously an astrological sign, but we went through kind of a naming exercise and, you know, looked at what inspired us and what kind of encompassed the globe and, you know, was non-denominational and, you know, and took us around the world. And that's where we ended up. And so there isn't really like a true meaning to it. It was just like any other branding agency that sits in a room for $1 million and throws a bunch of a board and comes up with something great. That's what we did.
Okay, sweet. I just wanted to see if there was like any big meaning behind it or anything, but no, I love the name. It's catchy.
Yeah, no, it was, it felt all encompassing, I guess, you know, and aspirational, right? Like we've got big dreams for this one.
No, seriously. Well, what is the difference between a condo tell and Orion House? Because as we've been talking, like it sounds very similar in a sense, but you guys are actually very different. And I want to highlight those differences because I think it's really important for the listeners. And then also, of course, as this brand continues to build and you guys are doing what you do, I want to like highlight that you guys really are standing out in a significant way.
Yeah. Well, so condo hotels are interesting. I think they were really compelling when they first came out, you know, I don't know if it's 10 or 15 years ago when they started being initially marketed. And it was a clever way for developers to finance their hotel.
Yeah.
It wasn't a particularly good investment for the condo owners themselves because there were so many different limitations on them. Everything from blackout dates to additional fees for when they actually want to use their units to a relatively low revenue split for the owners that were that essentially the investors in it. And so again, I think it was a really creative way for hoteliers to finance their hotels. The other challenge is that they sell the hotel rooms first before they ever sell the condo hotel that they then have to do a rev split on. So you're always kind of subordinated in that inventory. In our environment, we take a 75-25 split. 75% goes to the resident, 25% goes to Orion House as the ownership and management group on it. A lot of times in condo hotels, you're seeing 50-50 and 60-40. So it's a much more lucrative split. We don't have any blackout dates. You manage your calendar. You get to determine when you come and you go. As an owner or as a renter, you get to set your own average daily rates. Therefore, if you want to be more price competitive and guarantee that you're booked up every single night, you can put your unit at $100 a night while the rest of the inventory in that building goes out at $200 or $250, You just go, I definitely am not going to be there. I definitely want it rented. They have those levers to make sure that they can control their occupancy. And then they also have the right to decline travelers or different types of travelers that they don't want there. If they don't want animals staying in their units, that's entirely up to them. We as the building manager control occupancy, meaning we limit occupancy to two people on a studio in a one bedroom, four people on a two bedroom, six on a three, so that we kind of avoid the party situations. But for the most part, residents really get to control their own listing. And so we don't dictate that. So I think the big difference is on the condo hotel is that the hotel really owns your condo. Yeah. You're just a guest when you stay there. And you pay the guest, you know, the daily fee of $35 or $75 in some cases in order just to use your own unit. Well, we don't have those fees built in. So it's, you know, I mean, this is your residence. This is your primary residence. And you use your amenities just like you would as a regular tenant. And, you know, all of that kind of hotel fee-based stuff is just not a part of it.
Yeah. No, my last hotel before I quit my you know, 9-to-5 type deal to do this full-time was a condominium hotel. So we did have like the HOA with the owners and the revenue split of 50-50 and, you know, all these certain things. And you're 100% right, because the owners have no control over design. They have no control on furnishings, no control on rates or how we, you know, get revenue and guests and all the other stuff. So you're creating, like, what I like about it is like you're creating that entrepreneurial spirit of what you guys done with your properties, like alone, but then you're adding like that management, that professionalism team behind it that backs it up. So it's like really the people that do travel for entrepreneurial stuff or work in general, like have that ability to be hands on, but hands off. If they're like hands on with the fun stuff, like managing rates and how your listing is set, but then hands off with like the non fun stuff with cleaning and checking in. So.
And we do offer revenue management, and we do have interior designers that will come in and help stage and photograph your apartment. We also have copywriters that help market the listing for you, because we do want our residents' listings to be as competitive as our Orion product. So we set this entire suite of services up for success. The more money that they make, the more money we make, right? So we want to make sure that everybody's kind of booking if they want to be. But also giving them the flexibility so that they can have kind of their own creative twist on the experience. So you still do get that native experience. If you really want to live in somebody else's home and have the character reflected internally, that's you get that makeup. You know, still, like you said, a condo hotel, all the design looks the same, all the printing is the same, all of the everything's the same. Here, yes, we've got Orion Homes, which are incredibly well designed, but and also unique. It's not cookie cutter. Not every single one looks the same. But then our resident base has got a very dynamic listing base. So they all have a different personality. So you're getting kind of that local flair, but with the hotel consistency.
Yeah, for sure. And I was going to ask, how does it work with like, you know, with personal belongings and stuff like that? If you're a resident and then traveling, is there a certain like procedure protocol that you guys have in place for, you know, making sure like, I don't know, like pictures of the family isn't out or anything like that? Like, I'm just kind of curious on what that looks like when.
No, we really leave that up to the resident. Some residents like having photos of their families out, and they think that is a compelling design feature. Others don't want people to see their family. In my house, you can see there's portraits of our kids all over the place. Some of the more risque photos that the girls now at 15 and 17 are taking of themselves, I'm putting those away because we don't want to provoke any ideas. But for the most part, you know, we leave that up to them. We don't personalize it down to, you know, taking, you know, if you left your clothes out in your closet, you're leaving your clothes in your closet. If it's not locked, you left it unlocked. Like, we don't go in and have those standard uniformities. We go in and we clean and we make sure that the allocation of space and the number of hangers and everything is there. But still, if in the bathroom you leave your toiletries in an unlocked cupboard, those are out. The expectation is, you know, that if they're there, they potentially could be used. There's I think Daydream Apartments is one of the other groups that actually goes in and personalizes the bathroom, meaning they go and take all of your personal stuff and they put it away. And then when the traveler leaves and they're getting it prepared back for the resident to come back in, they put all of those personal effects back out. We do not do that. We leave it up to the resident. The resident needs to put their stuff in their locked closets, which are provided, that they then, you know, either put away or leave out, but we don't determine what is to be where. So.
Gotcha. Perfect. No, that makes total sense. Like, we're all adults, right? So we should be put our stuff away.
At a certain point where it's like, we can only do so much. And that's, you know, it's the cleanliness of the floors, glass, surfaces, bathrooms, linens, all of that stuff. But as it comes to kind of your personal effects, if like on my desk, I've got books out, yeah. I expect somebody might pick them up and read them. You know what I mean? Gotcha. And I don't mind, right? And by the way, sometimes I'm sure things disappear. I'm sure they're not actually stealing them, but they might move them and it goes in their suitcase. And that's kind of the cost of doing business. Mm-hmm. But we as Orion House do not oversee all of the tiny little nuances. We still leave that up to the resident to make sure that they're thoughtful in the way that they've got their unit procured, of which we provide them guidelines. We walk them through it. We provide them with lockable spaces. We give them the advice and the tools that they need. We also provide and stock personal stuff that you might need, whether it be additional shampoos and conditioners, toothbrushes, toothpaste, all that stuff that you would kind of have as an amenity kit in hotels. We stock that too. So our host can provide that in case it's not totally outfitted in the unit. So we do have that other hospitality piece to it. And then many of our properties will have little sundry shops and vending machines too. Perfect. So okay. If there are additional items that we don't personally stock, whether it be feminine products or, you know, sodas or any of that stuff, you know, that you always kind of inevitably need while you travel, we try and be as thoughtful as possible, but, you know, and provide as much stuff as we can complimentary. Mm-hmm. Aside from that, we do have other sources so that we can get the stuff there and facilitate deliveries like Instacart and Uber Eats and all that stuff for you.
For sure. No, that's awesome. I love it. Well, I want to get into like a final question because there's, you know, obviously we're living in a unique time of 2020 with coronavirus and, you know, our political, you know, elections and stuff like that going on in the US. It's been a fun time. We're having a great year. I want to know what do you see the role of Orion House and this new style of model for the short-term rental hospitality innovation playing in the recovery of hotel travel hospitality leading in throughout the years after COVID-19?
I think it's such a good question. We'll talk a little bit about kind of the travel trends that we're seeing right now because COVID-19 has changed a lot of behavior. So
yes.
Changed your work behavior, it's changed your school behavior, it's changed your travel behavior, socialization, all of those things. You know, the pendulum has swung one way super far, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, okay, masks and gloves and you can't go anywhere and it's locked down and only essential services are open to on one extreme of that pendulum swing. Can't leave your apartment for 30 days, like craziness. And this is different variations of it all over the world. Yeah. And then there's other more relaxed situations and everything in between. What we're seeing in travel is that people still want to go places. They are doing it differently. Mm-hmm. And so now at the beginning of COVID, like, you know, in March, people were driving within a 200-mile radius and they were going on 5-day trips, for example. Now we're seeing that driving radius is up to 1,500 miles.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Now your driving radius is 1,500 miles. The average stay went from 4.3 days to 7.7. And now we're seeing that booking going into 2021, 2022, and now 2023. So these families that did these annual vacations and whatever type of vacation it was before that they flew when they went to Disney or they flew when they went to Miami or whatever it was that they were doing, they go, wait a second, I can drive and take my 3 kids and my wife and go to Panama City Beach and spend a week there. And instead of going to an Orlando or a Miami for 3 or 4 days, now I can spend a week or 2 weeks. They're also going to the mountains for extended periods of time, seeing a lot of 1-month rentals so that you can go out into different places. So when you talk about like, what do I see this affecting in the future? would say 50% of that behavior will stick, right? Mm-hmm. Like families are going to go, we loved that. We made great memories. Like this is, you know, I mean, it's less stressful. We've got more flexibility. We had more money to spend on the things that we wanted because we didn't spend it on airline tickets or whatever the case may be. On the other side, as it relates to kind of the residential product that we're creating, it services that same need, but from a different perspective, mm-hmm. saying, okay, now you've got to work from home. So we're creating all of the tools that you need to be successful to work from home, where you've got, you know, the single pod working spaces, you've got conference rooms, you've got all of the video technology. We also, in our short-term rentals, have designated workspaces inside the unit too. So if you don't want to use the common workspaces, you can work inside the unit. But it allows a person that's working remotely now to go and travel and do the 1 month in Montana if they want to, and then monetize their residence. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of that behavior that's going to stick. And separately, you know, quality of life in cities like New York and Boston and San Francisco, and where you were already living in such a confined and very, very expensive space. Oh, now you can't leave it. And there's nowhere to go. And there's crime and there's all kinds of stuff going on the streets and the rioting, because for all the reasons that you'd mentioned before, in addition to COVID, made those cities really undesirable. And so having a kind of a hiatus in the South, which we primarily are focused in the Southeast US, we're seeing 1,000 people a day relocating down there. And it might not be their primary residence, it's secondary or third residence, where they're going, I can spend a month or 2 months or 3 months or 2 weeks out of the month in Miami or Fort Lauderdale, and then be back in New York in the grind for the every other week when they're now allowed in the office. So that flexibility is enormously valuable to them, and to be able to monetize it even more so. And I don't see that change going back to what it was. I mean, there will be fewer people that live that way, like as offices get back to, you know, full or relatively full capacity or regular schedules or whatever it is in the years to come. But in the interim, we've got a long road ahead where people need to find a comfortable way to live and to travel that's sustainable, that, you know, is not compromising your mental health and your marital conditions and, you know, all the other
stuff. Yeah.
Kind of go along with it, but I think a lot of the behavior change we're seeing now is here to stay, because there's a lot of quality of life stuff that, you know, is positively impacting us. And I think people are going to want to hang on to it.
No, I'm glad you said the word flexibility, because a lot of our mutual friends and people I've had on the show, we talk about, you know, COVID really sped up a lot of innovations and changes that were to come over the next like year or two, and that really crunched it down into like 6-8 months. And we sped up a lot of things. A lot of our tech stacks have been advanced and have gotten, you know, we're seeing more properties go to keyless entry, and whether it's a hotel or a property like Orion House or like any vacation rental, everyone's just advancing their stuff in a lot of ways. And flexibility in everything, I think we've seen the, you know, flexibility when it comes to cancellation policies and booking policies and how we, you know, do these operational things. But then the guest, you know, the ability to say, I want to pick and choose how I spend my time. And if I have to discover my own backyard again, in the sense of like that radius that you're talking about, you're making a bunch of good points. Like, they're not spending money on travel. They're not as stressed, and they're not as like, you know, jet lagged and all the other stuff that comes with the other types of travel we were doing. And now it's really bringing into this, like, okay, this is flexible. This is something I can customize to my own choosing. And I 100% agree with you. I don't think we're going to see it leave. Obviously, like you said, it's going to just maybe slow down for a little bit once things get back to like a normal, but this is part of recovery. And when you're in recovery mode, this is what's carrying the industry to that point. So
when you get comfortable with it and you like it, you're like,
yeah,
I don't need to do this ridiculous over the top vacation with flights and connecting and rental cars. And are you kidding me? That is nothing but straight chaos. You know, we're going to pack up the kids and go to the Grand Canyon. It's pretty simple.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
It's cool. It's, you know, people are rediscovering our country, our continent, which is so extraordinary anyway. You know, that like, why we don't have to cross the borders to go do that. I mean, this has made it really difficult to do so. So stick in your own backyard, and there's just so much stuff to see here. And I think, you know, it goes back to probably my childhood where it was road trips. Everywhere mm-hmm. was a road trip, and it was fabulous. You know, and we did a lot of camping and a lot of outdoor stuff and a lot of everything. I mean, it was never a flying trip. I've never been on a plane with my parents.
Yeah.
You know, and Greg's kids are like, oh, if we're not going international, I don't want to go. I'm like,
well,
then stay home.
Well, no, it's like, and I'm a sun person. I hate the cold, and I'm in Washington State, so it's a little cold, but like, it has been kind of cool though to like go explore Leavenworth again. I haven't been to Leavenworth since I was probably, I don't know, 10. Uh-huh. And so it's like, it's been like 15 years, and it's like, okay, like there's actually a lot of cool stuff out here that I just haven't gone out to explore again. And it's different and it's exciting. It's like, I can continue to do this more often. Like, I don't need to go to Cancun or Florida every time, you know, I travel. It's like, I can do more of these trips.
I've Arizona. Now we've got New Mexico on our list. Like, all these extraordinary places I haven't been. Like, no reason not to. And we're two people out of, you know, 300 million. They're doing the same exact thing, you know? And so I just think a lot of that behavior is going to stick around. I mean, personally, what I can say is I'm a little concerned about the hotel industry as a whole. Like, I find it hard to understand why they're going to come back with a vengeance like they were before. Mm-hmm. You know, especially the way that they used to price and market and, you know, play those games with us as consumers, because I think we got a lot more savvy. Mm-hmm. And now with remote working, like, you don't have to be on the peak times. Yep. And you don't have to pay, you know, those inflated rates during compression times.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be massively affected because they exploited consumers for a large majority. You know, I mean, and the $30 cheeseburgers at room service is sickening.
I'm guilty of that when I was a hotel manager. So
it's all about it. So like all that stuff. I think they're gonna have a much more difficult road to recovery.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I see a lot of changes going in the sense like if. I had another guest on the show. He said it's sad. He's a consultant in the hotel space, but it's sad that we have to innovate when we're forced to innovate. We should have been doing this stuff a long time ago. And we just never did. We were so stuck in the old ways. So I'm curious to see how that recovery will go, but I'm predicting we're going to see hotels go more in like the horizontal growth in the sense of like spreading out their rooms and they're creating like a community space versus going up in like just having like that option of, you know, spread out and safety, but then also more kind of like a hybrid in the vacation rental world as well. So it's going to be interesting to see play out, but we'll see how things go in 2 years, 3 years. So,
I'm curious to see what they do.
Yeah. Well, I want to say thank you for being on the show. Obviously it's been fun conversation. I think we went a little bit longer than we both expected just because we're geeking out on all this fun stuff and hospitality. But I want to give you an opportunity to give it like any final thoughts or conclusions to the episode, maybe a shameless shout out, anything that you have just to leave the listeners on right now as they're turning in.
I love the shameless shout out. Obviously, but it belongs first with my partners who are not here with us today, but that are extraordinary. So without them, I wouldn't be here. Namely, Kanan Whited, who is my co-founder and CMO.
Yes.
And too many others that I would like to name, but I don't want to leave anybody out. So that's my first shameless shout out. And then secondarily, our waitlist is open. So we've got about a dozen cities that we are currently taking waitlist names on. Will, thank you for joining on that. But it's just orionhouse.com/waitlist. And you will be added to that. And for anybody that's interested in renting in our communities, we'll keep you up to speed as the buildings are opening and new inventory becomes available. And just in general, you know, like, thanks everybody for being interested and keep doing what they're doing. I know your listeners are doing what we're doing and running their own Airbnbs. And if I can ever be a resource, you know, I'm readily accessible at all times, both to you and your community, Will. But, you know, I'm an entrepreneur and I'm doing one door at a time, just like everybody else is. So if we can be a resource and, you know, tap into us or just share stories, I'm on a lot of forums and Facebook and whatever. So we're all in it together and hope to create a great business moving forward.
Yeah, for sure. No, I'm excited to be on the wait list. I miss being that kind of like operator, you know, type deal. So it's like, this is a perfect opportunity to start investing and getting into that game again. So I'm pumped. And I, of course, will include everything in the show notes. So any Slick Talkers listening right now, please go ahead, look at the show notes, click the links, check out Orion House. I'm also going to include, anytime you guys update on a property or anything going out, I'll put in the newsletter so everyone's aware. You guys, this is some key stuff to follow along with. So I'm excited to include you into the Slick Talk universe of content, and of course, keeping the community up to date. And I just want to say thank you again. Thank you to your co-founders. Thank you to being on the show and providing this awesome, valuable content as we're, moving forward, as always.
And one other thing, Will, feel free to, we've got a lot of published information that's great for anybody, whether they're in our community or not. Feel free to grab that and share it too. So anything that we put out publicly, y'all are willing or able to share that freely.
Perfect. Awesome. You heard it, Slick Talkers. I'm going to be sharing, so start following along. All right, Cindy, thank you so much for being on the show, and we will talk again very, very soon.
Thank you so much for listening. We love your support and want to provide the best we can to all our listeners. So please find us online, social media, and on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and Google Podcast.
What's up, everybody? If you've gotten this far into the episode of Slick Talk, the Hospitality Podcast, then you are amazing, and thank you so much for tuning in. We want to send you two places really quickly. If you can, check out the show notes and click the hospitality.fm link. Check out all of our other shows on the podcast network. And don't forget, if you have someone that you want to hear on the podcast, then fill out the guest fill out form so that way we can get them on the show. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy another episode of Slick Talk, the Hospitality Podcast.